Go ahead and turn it over to Brother Jason.
This is new. You haven't seen these. Oh, I hope you're ready. All right, good evening, everyone. All right. It's good to see you all again. So I understand I have 25 minutes. I hope that you found that to be an interesting quote. I stuck that up there because I thought you might think so. Here's the point. Doctrine impacts actions, right? This is the major thing to take from all of this kinder transport stuff. Doctrine impacts actions. It affects how you live. Your beliefs are important. Now, who has heard before of the kinder transport? Oh, good. So, what was it? Anyone? Kids, what? Yeah, Jewish kids were taken out of Germany and Austria, Czechoslovakia, and the Free City of Danzig, which was a city-state that existed for like about 20 years. They were taken out of there too. They were taken and they were brought to England. There were 10,000 children in all. When Parliament first approved the movement, they approved it for an unspecified number of children, and it ended up that it was 10,000. 250 of those kids went to Christadelphian homes or hostels that the Christadelphians started. So what we're going to do is I'll just tell you a little bit of history of the kinder transport, just briefly. And what I really want to do is talk about the people, because some of you have already heard about this, and I have two new people for you to meet. So there you go. So then we're going to talk about the why. So here's the history. Kristallnacht. You've heard of that? It means the night of broken glass. Yeah, more or less. It means, yeah, night of broken glass. So November 9th through 10th, that's essentially what it means. November 9th through 10th, 1938, Kristallnacht. This is the first all-out state-sponsored attack against the Jews by the Nazis. So Hitler came to power, what year? 1933, that's right. He comes to power in 1933. He immediately implements measures against the Jews. So by April of 1933, there were a number of different things about who could practice, you know, certain Jewish doctors couldn't practice medicine where they were reimbursed by the state insurance companies. Jewish lawyers couldn't practice, various things like that, right? So measures like that, he started boycotting Jewish businesses, state-sponsored boycott, and it eventually culminates here in 1938 in Kristallnacht, in which it is the night of broken glass because mobs ran through Germany and Austria and crushed, broke the windows of Jewish shops, stole everything inside. The Jews were blamed for the violence, and they actually had to pay to repair everything. So it's a very, very crazy. We don't have time to talk about why that was, but if you want, I can go into a little more of that later. Suffice it to say, Kristallnacht was crazy. 30,000 Jewish men were arrested. They were taken to concentration camps, like Dachau, Buchenwald, and about 100 people were killed. So tons of synagogues were set on fire. It was a very scary night. The world looked at this and essentially said, whoa, Germany, like, this is nuts. What civilized nation does this to their own people? Like, what is going on? And so, in response to the pictures and the things that people heard about Kristallnacht, this is a synagogue. That's shop window. That is where the kinder transport came into being. So you will remember Kristallnacht happened what month? November of 1938, that's right. So the kinder transport is actually a response to that. This is Britain's response. Now, anybody here heard of Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain before? He's famous because he's the guy who waved the little piece of paper, right? He went to the Munich conference, came back in 1938, and he said, there will be peace for our time because they gave Great Britain and France decided to give Czechoslovakia to Hitler because that was what he said he wanted. He wanted the Sudetenland, this portion that had a lot of ethnic Germans in it. He wanted the Sudetenland of Czechoslovakia, and Great Britain and France decided that they wouldn't stop him, right? They couldn't really give him permission because they weren't actually Czechoslovakia, so they, you know, couldn't say, you can have our country, but that's kind of what they said. So that's what they did. Chamberlain says, peace for our time, and then in a year there's a war, and like the worst war ever. So he's kind of gone down in infamy a little bit for that. But what happened is he actually felt bad about the whole thing that happened with Czechoslovakia, and so the Kinder transport, he pushed it through Parliament and said, you know, this is really what we want to do. We're going to allow these children to come. And so all of this was, it was sponsored by the English government, and it was supported by the German government. So something that a lot of people don't know is that up until 1941, Hitler's policy with the Jews was just to get them out of Germany. And his big thing, he would stand up and he'd make speeches and he'd say, all I want to do is get the Jews out and nobody wants to take them. So, you know, you look at me and you ask, why do you say all these bad things about the Jews? Well, it doesn't look like you think they're all that great either. Right? So that was, you know, the kind of stuff that he would say. So he would say those kind of things, and this is really one of the only instances in which a nation of the world actually brought Jews to their shores. So that's the Kinder transport. It takes place until August 1939. Any thoughts on why it ends in August 1939? War starts on September 3rd, 1939. Hitler invades Poland on September 1st. Britain and France, Great Britain and France, had said, if you do that, if you invade Poland, we will declare war on you. He does it on September 1st. They declare war on September 3rd. So it lasts for almost a year, not quite. 10,000 children get out. Christadelphians take approximately 250 of these, and they start two hostels. So just to get an idea as to what this means to take these kids, right? We're talking, you're taking a Jewish child who has probably grown up celebrating Passover and Sukkot and the Feast of Tabernacles and these various Jewish holidays, right, the Sabbath, and all of a sudden they're coming and living in this Christadelphian house, right? It's a total culture shock, for one, because not only are they moving countries, which are totally different, right? They show up in England and everybody laughs at the clothes that they wear because they're wearing like the lederhosen and all that stuff, and you know, people are like, ha ha, you look like a dork, right? Like, that's how it goes for them, right? And it's sad. So they have to change cultures. They can't speak English, right? And a lot of them are teenagers. So think about trying to bring a teenage kid into your house. Sorry, kid. A teenager into your house, right? A teenager into your house who can't speak your language and who is totally unfamiliar with your culture. Right? That is not all that fun of a thing to do. And yet, Christadelphians took in 250 of them and actually opened up two hostels for the teenage boys that they couldn't find homes for. So that would be Elpis Lodge and Little Thorn were the two hostels. There were tons of things that the Christadelphians did. One of the other things, I actually got a letter from a sister in England that said, my family decided to take a child and we realized that we actually didn't have enough room in our house to take the child after we like agreed to do it and we were going to sponsor him and everything. So we bought a new house. Like that. So this is the kind of commitment that we're talking about. And Christadelphians took in 250 children. There's a history, a doctor of history in Canada, actually. She did her dissertation on Jewish refugees and the Christians in England in 1933 to 1939. Very specific. And so what she did is she studied the Christadelphian, she studied the Methodists, she studied, I think, the Quakers, and she studied the Catholics. And she compared them all, and her conclusion was that compared to their numbers, the Christadelphians helped the greater amount of children than anyone else. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So, that's just the history of it, right? That's a little bit about, hey, what's going on here? There. That's a little bit about the Kinder transport itself. What I really want to do is introduce you to some of the Kinder. I sometimes call them the kids, which is really funny because they're like in their 90s. But these are some of them. These are some people that you may not have met before. If you read Volume 1, you might recognize Max and Pauline. That's the two of them. They're actually from the Free City of Danzig. When I called up Max, his wife, they said, oh, we're from the Free City of Danzig. And I was like, what is the Free City of Danzig? Like, I've never heard of that in my life. And his wife proceeded to lecture me on how could I be a teacher and not know what the Free City of Danzig was. So anyway, there you go. It turns out it was this little teeny place that was created by the Treaty of Versailles and was subsequently destroyed when Hitler invaded it in 1939. So it existed for about 20 years. So there's Max. This is in the 1990s, and he is standing with Timothy and Muriel Whitaker. So Timothy Whitaker was Harry Whitaker's son. So if you've read any of Harry's books, you might be familiar with that name. So Max lived with them, and he told all kinds of funny stories. He's just a very jolly guy. You'll see that maybe in his video. But his big thing that he said that he remembered, this is an interesting thing to remember. He said Harry Whitaker was a teacher, and it was really important. He had a one-year-old son. Timothy was 1 year old when they decided to take Max and Pauline. And that's about the age that Max and Pauline were. He said it was really important to Harry to have an athletic son. So he would make me go outside and do all these sports all the time until I got really good. And then he stopped and he was like, and I was good. Okay, well, whatever. So he was just, that was like the kind of things that he would say to me. So we got to do this video interview with him. What ended up happening was his sister Pauline actually started studying for baptism, and she was going to get baptized, but she got tuberculosis. She contracted tuberculosis, and she subsequently died fairly soon after. And because of that, they were afraid. Max ended up having a spot on his lung, and so it was thought that he also had tuberculosis. And so for the sake of Max, they quarantined him and sent him off somewhere else. And for Timothy's sake, they were afraid, you know, he was only a few years old by that point. And so Max was sent off. But in, I guess, the traditional English manner, they didn't actually tell Max why. And so it was only until the 1990s when he met up with Timothy and Muriel that he was able to read Harry's diary and read about how he was sent away and why and all of that. So he'll tell you about that. You ready? Here we go.
I was born on the 24th of June, 1929. My mother was VOF and my father was ESO. And I had two brothers. George was the oldest and Robert, who was 1 year younger than him. And my sister Pauline, I am the youngest. We lived by the beach, which was wonderful. Until the Germans came in. At Kristallnacht, we were all in the living room and somebody threw it up through our window. My parents said, stay in the house, don't go out. We heard a lot of noise outside. Stay home. My brothers, George and Robert, they were too old to go on kinder transport. They went to England 1 year before we left. I left Sapport with my sister on May the 3rd, 1939. My parents took us to this bus with other children, and we got on the bus and said goodbye, and that was the last time we ever saw our parents. The bus went through Hamburg, and I saw the Nazis marching. Then we went to the train station, got on the train, we wound up in Berlin. I looked out of the window and I saw Hitlerstrasse, the big swastikas on all the buildings. And then finally the train moved and we wound up in Holland. The next day we got on the ship and wound up in England. The Whitakers treated me very well. I loved them. That's how good they were. The Whitakers were Christadelphians And there were many more twisted elephants in the neighborhood. Most of them took in children from Europe. I had to go to church every Sunday. The twisted elephant people at the church were very nice. My sister got sick, and the Whitaker sent me on vacation to Leeds. So while I was in Leeds, I got a letter telling my sister passed away. And then I went back to the Whitakers, and my life went on until they sent me away. And then many, many, many years later, when we were in England with the Whitaker son, and his wife gave me part of a diary. I went back to the hotel after we had dinner together, and I read it, and then I realized Pauline had TB and had a spot on my lung. And then I knew they sent me away because they figured their son could die and I could die, but it never happened.
If you could say one thing to the Whitakers today, what would you say to them?
If it wouldn't have been for you people taking Pauline and I in, I probably would have been dead by now. I'm very, very happy what you did. Kept me alive.
All right. So that so that's Max. There we go. Okay. We just have a few more minutes. Let me tell you about Ernst. Ernst, actually, we're hoping to see him. He lives in Rockville, so you guys over there will know where that is. Yeah, he lives in Rockville. I'm gonna be doing this talk at your ecclesia in a couple of weeks, and I invited him to come, so we'll see if he comes. He's really young, comparatively. He's in his early 80s because he actually came on the Kinder Transport when he was 4 years old. So he ended up, you know, this is him with the Moores, the Christadelphian family. So you can tell he was just a little kid then. And this is what he told me when I asked him, can you tell me a little bit about the Moores? And his response was, it was amazing to me. I mean, they became my family. You asked me how they treated me like I was their very own. They used to, my sister, she'd come over from the Morgans. His sister came over as well. She was 7 and lived with the Morgan family. For example, we went on different vacations to the seaside. I think once we went to Weston-super-Mare. It was very, very good. The closest family I think I ever experienced were in those 7 years with the Moors in England. It was an incredible time for me. So here's Ernst and his video.
I was born in Vienna, Austria in 1935. After the Wehrmacht, the men were arrested and ordered to report to Dachau. The synagogues were burned, Jewish cemeteries were desecrated. It was essential to get out of there as quickly and as expeditiously as possible. I was on the July the 12th Kinder Transport with my sister, who was 6 years old at the time. My first memories are coming into the home of the Moores, Marjorie and Harold Moore, living at 29 Britain Road, Stoke, Coventry. I was their son. When I was notified about my mother's death in 1948, I remember going up to Marjorie and saying, can I call you Mum now? And I called her Mum ever since that time. There was no effort to convert us to Christianity or Christadelphia, even though we went to Sunday school over there and participated in the Bible readings every day, every night. We did receive Jewish literature from London helped us maintain our Jewish identity, which I did. I really didn't have since I was so young at the time. But yeah, it was a wonderful, wonderful time. After that, my sister and I came to the U.S. and finished high school, finished college, went off to Northwestern University, got a Ph.D. in chemistry. Then I did a postdoc at Columbia University until 1965. So I was sort of a professional student for a time. We took a 3 Jewish heritage tours, and part of the tour was the 2 camps. One was Terezin, Theresienstadt, and I remember just standing outside. We'd go in, the Auschwitz-Birkenau was a holy event, so I buckled up and went inside. I went into a room that had a cage on one wall filled with suitcases. There were like maybe 250 black suitcases and 250 brown suitcases. And the brown suitcase that followed me from Vienna to England to Birmingham over 17 years. That was one of those identical to the brown suitcases I was in Auschwitz. And suddenly I felt part of it. I mean, I never even thought of myself as a survivor, but just that at one point in time I did. I think it linked me to this horrible event. Thank you for the life you gave me. I mean, these people were so giving, and you know, they shared everything. It was amazing.
So that's Ernst. Now, just two things to say about him quickly. Clarification: you may have noticed that he said there was no effort to convert. That's an interesting thing because the Jews were very sensitive about people trying to convert their kids. And in fact, the Catholic Church did that. They took a lot of the Kinder Transport kids, and essentially they all became Catholics. So one of the things that the Christadelphians did is they said, well, treat them as normal. What he's saying is he was not pressured to be baptized. He was not pressured to become a Christadelphian. But he went to meeting, he went to Sunday school, he memorized all of his proof verses, which are his memory verses, and he did the daily readings. Even when he moved to Alabama, he told me that he and his sister, they'd sit down together. They were 10 and 13, and they would sit down and they would do their readings together in Alabama. So just to give you an idea, you know, the family wasn't just like, okay, well, you go sit off in the corner while we do the Bible readings or whatever. It wasn't like that. But it was a sensitive issue as to, you know, were children going to become Christadelphians or not. But I want to just talk about that real quick. There was one last thing I wanted to tell you about Ernst.
Don't shut it.
This is rough. Okay. So I asked Ernst another time, if there was one final thing you could say to the Moors, what would you say? His immediate response was, I love you. And he said, that's actually the last thing I said to them, because he went and he visited them in 1980 when they were in Leamington Spa in the UK before they died, and that those were the words that he said to them. So why did Christadelphians get involved in the Kinder Transport? This is where it all comes together. This is what Suzanne Schlom, who's actually Sister Suzanne Schlom, she's been baptized, she was one of the children, she said that Mrs. Hanslip, the Christadelphian who took her in, this is what Mrs. Hanslip said to her. True Christians do not hate Jews. Jesus was a Jew. In fact, true Christians love Jews and try to help them. That was why she had wanted to give a home to a Jewish child. This is Ernst Hunes. He went on to become a hematologist, a well-known one in the UK, and he was another one of these children. Mr. and Mrs. Clamp were very religious, being Christadelphians. They believed that the Jews were God's chosen people. It was for this reason that the small sect had decided to help German Jewish children. That was why I went to them. And this is what Harry Whitaker said. We just met Max Rubenstein. Received Jewish refugees into homes in this country because they were the distressed seed of Abraham. So, to wrap this all up, that's why our community acted. Because we read, we understood, we knew who the Jews were. Don't worry. 30 seconds. Hannah Holman, I want you to meet her specifically because she is Sister Hannah Holman. Now, this is why I think you'll find this interesting. About a year ago, I was talking to her daughter, who's right here, Anita Waite, down in Melbourne. And I said, oh, can you send me a family picture? So she sent me this. You want to know what's neat about this picture? Almost every single person in this picture is a Christadelphian. There's Hannah right there. That's her family. Almost all of them have come in. And in fact, these are the children who were then baptized as a result of the kinder transport. There's a number of them. And you know what's neat is they all went on then to have families like Hannah's. And so, in fact, you see there are hundreds of people that have come into the truth through this action because the Christadelphians believe that the Jews are God's chosen people. We believe in the promises made to Abraham, and therefore that doctrine impacted our actions, ultimately saving lives, but more importantly, bringing eternal life.